Shema Yisrael.
Welcome to the broadcast outreach of Living God Ministries with Aaron Budgen. Aaron discovered Jesus is his Messiah while preparing to be a rabbi. He now teaches for several organizations and is the teaching pastor for Living God Ministries. Strongly distinguishing between the Old and New Covenants, Aaron presents the scriptures from a Judaic and historical frame of reference. Join Aaron now as he reveals the reality foreshadowed and the new life we can now experience because of what the Lord Jesus accomplished for us.
I'm presenting a verse-by-verse study through Ephesians, and at the end of the previous message, I was at the end of Ephesians chapter 2, speaking about the temple of God, and that the temple of God is constructed of the people who decide to embrace the gospel, who believe the gospel, who are resurrected from the dead through the indwelling presence of the Holy Spirit. When a person is made into a child of God, then God dwells within them, and so they individually become the temple of God, the house of God. And as we are considered on a collective basis, collectively, we are also a house of God, a temple of God. And in the previous message, I was trying to emphasize the point that the temple of God is therefore the people, that we are his temple. In comparison with the churches that people construct with their hands, and they refer to those places as the house of God, which is not valid. It is an error to refer to these buildings as the house of God. And when you hear people refer to these buildings as the house of God, as the temple of God, then that tells you that you are interacting with a person who probably has no real concept of what Paul is describing here at the end of Ephesians chapter 2 with regards to us being the temple of God, the house of God. Now, we don't have a lot of information available to us concerning what the temple may be like in the kingdom of heaven. We don't have a lot of passages that we might be able to refer to that would give us a lot of details concerning what that really looks like and how that's organized. And I think that this is intentional by God, that he does not want us to have these kinds of details and to consider the temple in the kingdom of heaven, the house of God, to the extent that most people would like to consider it. That this is something that God is not giving us a lot of information on, and this is definitely intentional. And I believe that the reason why is to emphasize the point for us that we will become the temple of God as we believe in him, as we are born again by his Spirit. We do have some information available to us when God was speaking with the nation of Israel and giving them the details concerning the construction of the tabernacle. He gave images to some of the people who were involved in the construction of the tabernacle so that they could make copies of certain artifacts that would be found in the temple of God in the kingdom of heaven. The altar, for example, was a copy of the true altar that would be found in the temple of God in the kingdom of heaven. So also the Ark of the Covenant and the table and the lampstands, things like that. There were some images that were presented to the people who needed to understand what they looked like in order to make a copy of what was found in that temple. And this temple is spoken of again in the book of Hebrews, which I believe Paul wrote the book of Hebrews, and that he spoke about the temple in the kingdom of heaven where Jesus went and sprinkled his blood on the true Ark of the Covenant, the real seat of God in that sense, in the real temple in the kingdom of heaven. But whatever this temple looked like, and whatever those details may be, we can see that there is another temple that is being constructed by God. And another way to look at this is to consider that God is building another place for him to dwell. That whatever this temple is in the kingdom of heaven, it is becoming obsolete. It is going to become something like a museum, in a sense, because it will become obsolete. It will no longer be used for the purposes that it was used for during this time era between the creation of humanity and the new covenant that was put into effect after Jesus died, rose from the dead, and sprinkled his blood on the altar and on the mercy seat, the Ark of the Covenant that is in the true kingdom of heaven, in the true temple. When that was accomplished, we have a new covenant that goes into effect, and that was the beginning of the construction of another temple, of another house, of another building in that sense. It is composed of the people. That's what we see at the end of Ephesians chapter 2, that this is the new temple where God will dwell. He will dwell among his people. And this emphasizes even more the point that God is not so much interested in these buildings that we might construct or that have been constructed in the past, not even the tabernacle that he gave instructions concerning how to build that and how to make use of that. These were temporary structures that are going to be replaced with a permanent structure of people, that his interest is not to have a place, but to have a people who have a relationship with him on the basis of them surrendering to the gospel, to the new covenant. And these are the people who enter into this eternal relationship with him because we want to. We can make a comparison of what it's like not to have our God in our lives and not to be a part of his life. And we also now know what it's like to be in his life and for him to be in our lives, and being able to understand the profound differences between the two. He gets a unique kind of person, a special kind of person, who he would not be able to have in any other way. And so I just wanted to mention that the temple in the kingdom of heaven, where we have the artifacts that were copied and used in order to construct the tabernacle and then eventually the temple of Solomon, and then we had some of them in the temple during the time when Jesus was conducting his ministry, and it's probable that these are going to be used again, that they have been hidden away, and they are going to be used again in a future temple that might very well be built. I personally have the opinion that it will be built, and these artifacts will come out from hiding, and they will be placed in the new temple that's constructed. But again, this is something that is made by the hands of men and is not what God is doing at all. He's building another kind of temple, a dwelling place for him, which is the spirits of his people. That's what we can see at the end of Ephesians chapter 2. Now, moving forward into Ephesians chapter 3, I'd like to skip ahead at first and go to verse 10, and then I'll go back up to verse 1 and work my way down. In verse 10, there's something very important that Paul refers to here, and so I'd really like to start with this. In Ephesians chapter 3, verse 10, it says, "To the intent that now the manifold wisdom of God might be made known by the church to the principalities and powers in the heavenly places." Now, there is a lot that has been said in this one verse, Ephesians chapter 3, verse 10. I'm just going to point out a few things. The first thing that I would like to point out is that the principalities and the powers in the heavenly places, those are probably referring to the angelic beings that rejected God, referred to as the demons. It could potentially include the angels as well. But what I think is really interesting to see is that the wisdom, the manifold wisdom of God, is going to be made known to these beings by the church, not by God. God is not talking to the principalities and powers in the heavenly places that are referred to here in Ephesians chapter 3, verse 10, at least not to the extent where he is going to reveal to them the manifold wisdom, the wisdom of God as it relates to what is described here in the book of Ephesians, that the revelation of the truth of the wisdom of God is going to be given by the church. The church is going to inform the principalities and powers in the heavenly places. We are going to be the ones who inform those beings of the manifold wisdom of God. Now, I find this to be quite profound, that if there is some wisdom that God is going to express to these principalities and powers, that he's not going to bother telling them. He's going to use us, which means he is going to inform us, the church, of the wisdom that he has. And we are going to be the ones who inform these principalities and powers. Now, that does not mean necessarily that we are going to engage in a conversation with them and say, oh, by the way, we would like to let you know some things about the wisdom of God. I don't think that that's what God had in mind when he had the idea of us being the ones of informing the principalities and powers of his wisdom. It's my opinion that this is something that they would overhear as we would communicate with one another, as we share with each other the manifold wisdom of God. As an example, what I am presenting in these radio programs, from what I understand, what I believe God has revealed to me, I am communicating the manifold wisdom of God, and it is quite likely that the principalities and powers are overhearing what I am telling you. And so they are being informed, not by me directly, but they are being informed because I am presenting the truth in a public way so that they can overhear what you and I are communicating to one another. In this case, with this audio program, it is a one-way communication. But you can correspond with me by email, and sometimes I can get on the phone. But in most cases, I do correspond by email, sometimes with regular mail. I do write letters also. But this is a really important thing to see here, is that there is a communication that is taking place between the church and these principalities and powers, which I believe is indirect, and that they are being informed. Now, what this means is that they were not informed. They did not know what God was doing. This is another thing that we can see from verse 10, is that if we are the ones who are going to inform them, make known to them the wisdom of God, well, then obviously that wisdom was not known by them. They did not know what God was doing. Now, that, of course, doesn't imply that they knew nothing at all. What that does imply is that what they knew was either wrong or partially correct or could be correct. They knew some things about what God was doing and about his wisdom, but there was enough distortion concerning what they believed, what they thought was true. There was enough distortion that they clearly were not properly informed, and that this was intentional by God, that he was keeping something secret from the principalities and powers, that he was going to do something secretly that they would not know about, that they would not understand, which means that they thought he was doing one thing when it turned out he was really doing something else. These are a couple of things that we can see from Ephesians chapter 3, verse 10, and so I would like to mention some possibilities concerning what this could look like. I think the most likely possibility is that the principalities and powers thought they were in a conflict. They thought that they were in a struggle that wasn't really the struggle that God was focused on, that there was a perception of the principalities and powers. For this, I'm going to go back to the Garden of Eden, of course, when the devil deceived Adam and Eve by encouraging them to eat from the wrong tree. He told them that they could be like God if they knew what was good and evil. If they only knew what was right and wrong, then of course they could do that which is right, not do that which was wrong, and then they could be better than who they were. They could be like God. Now, Adam and Eve rejected God. They considered him to be a liar because they believed the lie of the devil, and they experienced the consequences related to that. But ever since, they have still had to function, the children of Adam and Eve have had to function on the basis of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, from the perspective of the principalities and powers, that was a victory for them, because now they are the ones who are going to manifest their image within and through God's people, within and through the creation that God made. When people are spiritually dead, they are certainly quite available for the demonic spirits to influence, to relate to, and the demonic spirits can manifest themselves within and through people in a similar way as God was able to manifest himself within and through Adam and Eve. With his spirit dwelling within them, they were a reflection. They were able to be a reflection of their God through their relationship with him. But through his absence, they were, of course, very much available to the other spirits who could relate to them, and these other spirits could reflect themselves within and through the spiritually dead people who were born from Adam and Eve, born in the image of Adam, not in the image of God. And so people became a reflection of, or an image of, the devil, just to make that simple. And the way that this was accomplished was through the knowledge of good and evil, through the system of right and wrong, through the decisions that people would make outside of the influence of the Holy Spirit of God. In this way, the people in this world worshipped the devil. He was able to function as God would have functioned in our lives. He took the place of God in the people's lives, and so, in effect, he became like God. The devil became like God when he had a people who would worship him, serve him, believe him, trust in him as they would have believed and trusted in the true and living God. So when they rejected the true and living God and they embraced the false God, well, the false God became their God. And that's how the world has been functioning ever since. So the principalities and powers have been functioning all this time as if they had this victory of having a people who serve them, who believe and trust in them as if they are God. And this is all based on a system of what is right and what is wrong. And when you consider all the different religious systems that have existed since then, with many gods that they have worshipped, many different kinds of gods, and they had their temples, and they had their rituals, and their ceremonies, and their sacrifices. These were all expressions of people worshipping some of the principalities and powers, and they all had their own system of law. Every religion that has existed has been defined by its system of law, of what you are to do and what you are not to do. What is good? What is evil? Every religious system, especially those that are inspired by the principalities and powers, by some demons, people are worshiping these demons as if they are gods. People even refer to them as gods. And all of these religious systems are related to the idea of the knowledge of good and evil that this God represents, that this God defines. So the struggle that these gods or these principalities and powers believe they have had with the true and living God has been on this basis, a struggle of good and evil, of the knowledge of good and evil. So what happened? What happened was that eventually God set some people free, the Israelites. He set them free from slavery. And when he did, he passed judgment on all of the gods of Egypt, also all of their standards of right and wrong, all of their laws, all of their rules, all of their ceremonies and sacrifices, all that kind of stuff. He passed judgment against all of the gods of Egypt, which was another way of saying that he was passing judgment on all of the gods in the world. He selected a group of people for himself, brought them out, and established a new nation that recognized him as their God. And what did he do? He presented a law That's what he presented. He gave a law, a correct standard of what is right and wrong, of what is good and evil, of how they would relate to him and how he would relate to them. When the principalities and powers saw him establish the nation of Israel and present the law as it was given through Moses, then there was competition between God and the principalities and powers in terms of what system of law are people really going to live by. This would be the perception of the principalities and powers, because God invaded their world, invaded their people, and took some people away from them, and gave them his law that they are now going to live by. And so there is the appearance that there is now a conflict between God and the principalities and powers, and that the wisdom of God is contained within his law, and that this is in competition with the wisdom of the other religions, of the other gods that were promoting themselves in the world. So this became the beginning of a conflict between God and the principalities and powers. And there was a belief that this was the purpose of God, to now define what is good and evil, and so people will be attracted to him because they will have the correct law, the right God, that sort of thing. And that tends to be the behavior of people. It has been the behavior of people ever since God presented the law, of just trying to recruit people into living by the law that God gave. That is where the wisdom of God can be found, and a relationship with God can be found. And so there has been this competition, this struggle, this conflict between the Israelites and the rest of the world, the living God and all of the other principalities and powers who are pretending to be gods. There has been this conflict that has existed. And the belief has been that this is what God was really wanting to accomplish, and his success would be defined by how many people can he recruit into living by the Mosaic law. That has been the perception of the world. However many people will decide to conform themselves to the Mosaic law, that will define the victory of God or the accomplishment of his purpose. That has been the perception of the world ever since. And I believe that has been the perception of the principalities and powers, the demons, because that is what they have been focused on. That is what they have been doing. That is how they define their success. Now, I am out of time for this program, but this is the beginning of Ephesians chapter 3, and I wanted to start here with this perception that the purpose of God is how to get people to live by the Mosaic law, or a form of that law, just some way to get people's flesh under control, to manage the flesh, to get people to live by a correct standard of some kind of what is good and what is evil, as has been defined by our God. But the purpose of God has been how to make a new creation entirely, a new relationship between God and people entirely. And I will explain this more in the next program.
You have been listening to the broadcast outreach of Living God Ministries. You can hear all of our programs for free through our radio archive at livinggodministries.net. That is, livinggodministries.net. Do help us develop new radio programs and continue broadcasting on this and other radio stations. Send your contributions to Living God Ministries, P.O. Box 38353, Colorado Springs, Colorado 80937, or use the donation link on our website, livinggodministries.net. That is, livinggodministries.net.